Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
The scariest thing going on in U.S. foreign policy right now is the prospect of a war with Iran. The past few weeks have seen the U.S. accusing Iran of trying to blow up commercial ships, Iran breaking with part of the nuclear deal, and the U.S. sending more troops to the Middle East, all of which raises a frightening question. Is this Iraq 2.0? Now, that's what we're going to talk about today on Worldly from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Zach Beecham, here with Alex Ward, who is back from Vienna.
Hello.
And it's just the me and Alex show today. Jen's out. So start with the beginning of the recent tensions, not the whole beginning of U.S.-Iran relations, but what's been happening since about, I don't know, early May, right?
Okay, so not 1979.
No.
Okay. So May 5th is when National Security Advisor John Bolton put out this shocking statement, which effectively said the U.S. has credible intelligence that Iran is threatening Americans in the Middle East, the implication of which is that it could lead to the deaths of diplomats and other officials, troops, citizens, and so the U.S. would move an aircraft carrier and bomber planes to the region, right? Now, everyone, including us on this show before, when we talked about this on May 9th, we're just like, we're not too sure about this. Like, we don't know where this intelligence comes from. We have no proof of it.
John Bolton also has a long history of politicizing intelligence, right? Which is where the Iraq stuff really started to feel prescient.
Precisely, like, right?
Rerun.
So we were like, okay, wait a minute. Like, of all people, are we really going to trust John Bolton on like, a Middle Eastern country is threatening the United States, right? Okay. But then there were some interesting things happening in the region that then you kind of go, okay, well, maybe there's a problem here. So we're going to talk about things that we've seen since that May 5th statement that have increased worries that maybe the U.S. and Iran are headed for a conflict. And because there's a lot, we're going to start chronologically, beginning with the oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz.
Right. So geographically, the Strait of Hormuz is this really narrow area of water connecting the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman. It's right between Iran and the UAE. Geographically, and it is the gateway to the Persian Gulf from the rest of the world, where a lot of the very big oil-producing countries
right.
are. So oil gets shipped out of there. Like, a lot of oil gets shipped out of the
and
Gulf.
And other energy Hormuz. Sources. Like, it's kind of like the main pathway for the world's energy to, like, be shipped.
So if there's disruption there, if there's a threat to shipping there, it is a serious threat to the global economy. So in the first tranche of attacks, four ships were hit, right? And we're not actually fully clear on who did it, right? There's no official culprit, but it's widely believed to be Iran. Is that the sense of where we're at?
Yeah, exactly. So these four ships, they belonged, two of them to Saudi Arabia, one to the UAE, another one to Norway. They were shipping energy through Strait of Hormuz. And we don't know exactly who was behind it. Again, as Zach said correctly, the widespread perception is that Iran did it. The U.S. blamed Iran for it. Diplomats from those countries that own the ships all but said that it was Iran. Like, they're like, well, it was a state actor with these kinds of capabilities. And, like, it was very clear they were saying Iran without saying Iran. So that's kind of where we are, is that in May, when that attack happened, we were like, okay, this seems like perhaps Iran is sending some sort of message. We don't know if it's a one-off. We don't know really what it means. But, like, that was sort of step one, is only really about a week or so after Bolton's statement, we have that attack.
So the U.S. takes personnel out of its embassy in Baghdad. We don't have an embassy in Iran, so that's sort of our we're concerned about where things are going with Iran statement, because Iraq's obviously close. But then things get worse in the past week when there were two more tankers in the area that were damaged. Again, no one was killed in either of these attacks, and it is not obvious who did it. But this time, the U.S. accused Iran very openly of using something called limpet mines, which are a naval mine that attaches to a ship a little bit like a limpet or a barnacle, basically, and then blows it up. And it claimed to have video, right, that proved that this is what Iran did.
Yeah, the video is this, you can see it. It exists out in the world. It is a black and white grainy image that cuts out at some pretty key points. But what the U.S. Military says is that this is proof, essentially, that Iran was behind it. The video includes a boat that looks very much like an Iranian fast boat. It includes people trying to take an unexploded limpet mine off of one of the damaged ships. And on top of that, they also released pictures that show in one of them, like where one of the mines blew up and actually caused a hole in the side of the ship, and then another limpet mine that's unexploded further up. And so these, in totality, and there's also another tranche of these pictures released, in totality, the U.S. military is saying, not only do we know it's Iran, but like, here's what the attack looked like.
That seems like pretty compelling evidence, but is that accepted by everybody as proof that Iran is in fact responsible?
It's accepted by most. I mean, even like some of Trump's critics, like Adam Schiff, for example, House Intel chairman, and has said that the evidence is pretty compelling. Even German Chancellor Angela Merkel said there was strong evidence. But you're right. Not everyone has said that Iran was behind it. One of the leading executives of the Japanese company that owned one of the damaged ships was like, oh, it wasn't a mine. A flying object is what damaged the vessel. And you also see like the Japanese government itself be like, well, we don't want to lay blame here. But we're going to talk in a minute about something that's very clearly Iran's action. But like, we need to just get through a couple of things first.
These bombings and minings and explosions of various different kinds, they aren't the only thing that have become a major issue in U.S.-Iranian relations this week. Another one has to do with the nuclear deal, which the Trump administration obviously withdrew from, but the Iranians had been still adhering to.
Just quick reminder, what's sort of like the baseline, of the bottom line of the Iran nuclear deal?
The nuclear deal sets limits on how much uranium Iran can stockpile and to what levels. So higher level uranium can be used for fissile and military purposes when lower enriched uranium cannot at certain levels. And so this one concerns, I mean, it does a lot of other things, but those are some of the major components of the Iran nuclear deal. So what happened this week was an Iranian government official announcing that the Iranians would go beyond one of the limitations on enriching uranium in the nuclear deal, specifically the level to which the uranium can be enriched, slightly exceeding the amount allowed for in the nuclear deal. It's still not up to fissile grade yet.
Right, but it won't make a bomb.
Right, but it's a little bit higher than they had agreed under the deal to enrich their uranium to. And they said they would do this soon if they don't start to see sufficient benefits from staying in the deal, which is iffy with the U.S. out of it. The question is whether the Europeans, who are the other major party to the deal, can in fact provide Iran with the benefits that they need in order to back down from this threat to violate the deal's terms.
And what you said is the main thing to take away from that Iranian statement. The other bit is that Iran will also said that they will stockpile more low-enriched uranium beyond the capped limit. So, okay, fine. And also part of that, by the way, is because the U.S. like blockaded Iran from exporting the extra amount of that low-enriched uranium. So that's part of the reason why they may blow it by the limit by next week. But like that is a significant tension raiser, right? Because you see Iran is effectively saying, like, we see no benefits of staying in this deal anymore, so we're now going to stop violating it. And it's perhaps in an effort to, as you say, like, get some sanctions relief. But this is part of the worry here is that, like, if the diplomatic reason why the U.S. and Iran weren't totally at each other's throats is gone, then they might go at each other's throats. And what made me go crazy is then the U.S., after hearing the statement, was like, we really implore Iran to stay in the Iran nuclear deal.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, which, like, you left it a year ago. Like, you have no legs to stand on at this point. It was just, I did a double take.
You can't, when you break the rules, you can't ask for the rules to be enforced.
Yeah. So for lack of a better, the moxie of the Trump administration to do such a thing. And then there was something else earlier this week, right, Zach?
The Pentagon announced that it would be sending 1,000 more troops to the Middle East. And that's a new deployment in recent months to a total of 2,500, ratcheting up tensions severely, because if you're Iran, you're wondering, why is the United States starting to send more and more troops at a time of heightened tension when there are certain people in the U.S. government who seem very interested in starting some kind of conflict with Iran?
Totally, yeah. And you add that to like the aircraft carrier and the bombers or whatever, and you start to kind of freak out. I want to make one thing very clear. Like, 2,500 troops is small potatoes when it comes to like thinking about a war with Iran, right? So there are estimates even out there that it would require like more than 1 million troops to even launch a full-scale war. Now, you only really need 2,500 if you want to do like a limited strike on something, and that's not out of the realm of possibility. But like the grand worry of like full-scale all-out war, the U.S. is nowhere near positioned to do that with just that troop increase.
Right. It's just a signal of escalation.
Definitely.
A sign
for
that
sure.
The United States is getting potentially serious about starting up efforts to launch a war with Iran.
And now we're actually at the part where it gets really scary, because on Wednesday night, Thursday morning, it's still somewhat unclear, the Iranian military shot down a U.S. military surveillance drone. There was no one in it, right? It is an autonomous vehicle, so no one was hurt. But it is an expensive piece of equipment, and shooting it down is an escalation, a massive provocation from what it was doing before, at least allegedly. Iran has very clearly stated that it did this, and the U.S. military confirmed it itself. So we now have something very tangible, right? Where there was a mystery about who was behind the oil tanker attacks, we now know Iran shot down an American drone.
And so there's a lot to be concerned about in all this news. But now that you've sort of hopefully digested the developments of the past week, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to really get into the implications of all of this, what it means and why it all matters.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Okay, hi, and welcome back from the ad break. Now that you're back, we need to talk about how serious the threat of war with Iran is. Because I don't think it's trivial anymore. This isn't just people speculating. I don't think it was back in May when we first started talking about
right.
this. I think it's a prospect that Americans need to start taking really, really seriously. And, you know, to wrap our heads around that, should start with this stuff about the tankers.
When it comes down to the tankers, it's like, do you believe Iran was behind it or not, right? I would argue, based on the evidence that has been publicly released and based on statements by even some of Trump's critics at home and abroad, like it's looking quite likely that Iran was behind it. who else really in that region has the mine capability, has the aggressiveness in terms of patrolling that region? Like, it just makes a lot of sense.
Or why would they want to, right? There's not much of incentive for anyone else to disrupt international oil shipping.
Exactly.
To send a message of any kind. Right? I don't know. A terrorist group, maybe, but they don't have the mine capacity.
Exactly. But now we know that, like, Iran is taking credit for one of its actions, shooting down an American drone. They were like, it is us. We don't want to go to war, but, like, we're ready for war. And so, as an Iranian commander said after the drone was shot down, like, this is a clear message to the United States. So the next logical question is, like, why is Iran doing that? And I think the reason Iran is doing it is because they're trying, in a sense, to blackmail America to stop the sanctions campaign, right? So if they're basically saying, like, if we can't export oil, if we can't improve our economy, like, we'll take the whole system down with us. And the signaling here, I think, matters, because when you take both the tanker thing and actually the Iran deal announcement, because even though they're provocative actions, right, like, there's nothing minor about damaging international shipping. And there's nothing minor with damaging vessels with, like, humans on it. There's nothing minor with getting out of this nuclear deal or no longer abiding by certain parts of it. And there's definitely nothing minor about shooting an American military drone out of the sky. That is very clearly an escalation above what they've done before, and on top of that, taking credit for it. But it is interesting that, like, they could have done a lot more. It could have been a lot worse. And so I think this is sort of their first chess move in, like, trying to put pressure on the U.S. to reduce American pressure on it.
But to me, this seems like a fundamental misunderstanding, because in this administration, you have two foreign policy principals right now really running the show: National Security Advisor John Bolton and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. We don't have a confirmed Secretary of Defense right now. In fact, the acting one just resigned as we are taping this. It's a real mess when you're talking about military escalation. But the point is, you have two people who have long expressed not only openness but desire to escalate hostilities with Iran. Bolton has been on the "we should bomb Iran" path for quite some time now.
And called for regime change.
Right. Bolton has called for regime change. He's called for bombing their nuclear program. Like, he is a really hardcore, ideologically committed Iran hawk. And when Iran escalates in a fashion like this, something like a probing test with limpet mines that's non-fatal, what they do is they incentivize Bolton and give him ground to push for more escalation on the U.S. side, which creates the cycle I was alluding to earlier, right? Iran may be trying to deter the U.S. from putting more pressure on them or to get them to back down, but given the people in charge right now, it's very difficult for me to imagine that this kind of action won't lead to some kind of further escalation from the United States.
You know, as a reporter here, I'm always focused on, like, what mistakes has the U.S. made or is it possibly making? And, like, sometimes we lose sight of the fact that, you know, not only does the other guy get a vote in a conflict, but, like, it may also make a mistake, right? Iran may completely be miscalculating here. If it is behind the oil tanker attacks, that was a provocation that garnered the world's attention. And now taking credit for and committing the act of shooting down an American military drone, it's making a pretty big bet that Bolton Pompeo at some point will go, like, yeah, Mr. President, we really need to back down and find a way to de-escalate the situation. Like, I wouldn't put money on that. And on top of that, you're seeing Bolton and, like, his NSC underlings, like, trying to insert themselves into the chain of command at the Pentagon when it comes to Iran war planning. And, like, Pompeo going down to hang out with the chief of CENTCOM, Central Command, which is the military organization that oversees, like, American military operations in that region, for a very unusual meeting. Like, it's very uncommon for the Secretary of State to kind of do one-on-ones with a military leader like that. And it's focused really all around Iran. So, like, you have to wonder that in a sense, like, are they kind of waiting for the excuse, all right? Or for, like, that moment that where Iran crosses the line and they go, Mr. President, like, it's time to go. That said, and should we know, like, Trump is constantly saying he doesn't want war with Iran. And even, you know, Bolton and Pompeo, like, we're not seeking war here, but you do have to wonder about that. But, like, I think sort of the main takeaway I have from this, and I'm wondering if you have it as well, Zach, is, like, the fact that we've been talking about war with Iran and this sort of tit-for-tat that's continued since May 5th, like, we did need to be here. This was completely unnecessary, right? The U.S. didn't have – even if it did get credible intelligence of Iranian threats, like, it didn't have to put out that statement. It didn't have to make this, you know, the main issue. A lot of this stuff may have been taken care of quietly by removing diplomats or, you know, maybe some backdoor negotiations. I don't really know. But, like, it didn't have to be, there is a threat, we are countering it, and if they don't back down, you know, we'll see what happens. We're not seeking a war, but, like, hey, don't cross us. And on top of that, you just have this mixed messaging from the administration where they're like, we just don't want Iran to have nukes. That's Trump. And Pompeo saying that if Iran kills even one U.S. service member, that the U.S. would respond militarily, which is really a difference in the way the U.S. government is viewing this current crisis.
Well, yeah, the U.S. isn't a unitary actor, right? It's the different parts of the administration, I think, are sort of clashing with each other in key and often hidden ways. But look, we didn't have to be here in another fundamental way. This is the end point of Trump's policy that began with tearing up the Iran nuclear deal and severing the U.S.-Iranian relations and ties and level of very minimal, tiny, eensy bits of trust that had come up in the Obama administration. But, you know, before we stop talking about this, I want to ask you, Alex, very seriously, how concerned people should be listening to this about, you know, real escalation, about this situation getting bad. How worried should we be?
I think it's hard to know, but I asked a current Pentagon official who works on the Middle East about this, and I want to read the official's response to me on it. The immediate question is how we will respond. The bigger question is how we maintain deterrence without risking a full-fledged war. I don't know if the latter is possible in this heated environment. A controlled escalation between two old adversaries who don't talk directly is tricky business. All variables point to war. The only thing stopping this is the preference of Trump not to get involved in the region again. But we all know he's erratic and can change his mind easily. And his two top advisors, referring to Bolton and Pompeo, are ready to start shooting, and we in the department don't have leadership.
That's where we're going to leave you today. I want to thank our producer, Bird Pinkerton, for her excellent work as always, and I want to encourage you all to rate and subscribe and review the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
And a final reminder that our live show, our first live show, is June 24th here in D.C. We will put a link to get your tickets in the show notes. We really hope to see you. We hope that you'll enjoy seeing us debate foreign policy live and engage with us during and after the show. We do hope to meet you there.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Support for this show comes from Pendo. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo also provides AI-powered product analytics that fuel in-app guides to deliver personalized guidance to customers directly inside your app. Visit pendo.io/podcast to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/podcast to learn more.